Hi, everybody. Thanks so much for being here. This is the Seeds of Liberation podcast, formerly known as the Liberation Tapes, episode 3. Thanks so much for being here. Before we get started with the podcast, I'd like to give a shout out to Anchor, which is this amazing platform and app that makes it possible to easily record a podcast, but then also will distribute it to all kinds of different online platforms such as Spotify and iTunes. Thank you so much, Anchor, for this great, great service. And I would also like to thank Northfield Mandolins and Dennis Vance at the Mandolin Store down in Nashville, Tennessee. The mandolin that I'm playing in this episode is a Northfield F5S, and I bought it from Dennis at the Mandolin Store. Dennis has become a good friend, and it's a great place to buy musical equipment, especially mandolins. So thank you to Northfield and also the Mandolin Store. And thanks also to Luke Simbala of the Band Junkies here in State College, a great local promotion service, and Luke is a wonderful person with whom to work, and it's a great thing that he's doing for our local and regional music scene. Thanks so much, Luke and the Band Junkies. If you remember, the last episode was called Take Me Disappearing, Bob Dylan's Early Songs of Liberation, and it was recorded in support of a live show that I had last Friday, May 8th, also my 43rd birthday, during which I played guitar and sang 12 songs off of Bob Dylan's first 7 albums. Each of the songs had something to do with liberation and or liberating ourselves from attachments and conditioning that lead to suffering. So it was great to play that show, and I hope it was helpful for people in this time when everybody's feeling fairly cooped up in the future of how we're all going to operate in our world and local communities is kind of uncertain right now. So liberation. So thanks so much for anyone who tuned into that last week. It was a really good time. This episode is focused on something certainly related to liberation and the idea of planting seeds of liberation. And that is friendship. And I'm really happy to be talking about this particular topic. I was so moved last week by how many people showed up to listen to that live show that I streamed on Facebook. Overall, there were over 200 viewers. At any one point, there were about between 40 and 60, I think, or 40 and 55. A lot of people leaving comments. A lot of people made donations, which was certainly wonderful. And it just was this really, really great event where everybody seemed pretty energized and feeling good. And I got a lot of personal messages from people. So thanks so much for anybody who tuned in for that. But I wanted to make sure I said that everybody who came and just that whole thing about all the energy that was behind that show was really moving to me. people don't have to show up to watch this thing on Facebook that a friend is doing. They don't have to care about it at all. There's all kinds of things people can do with their time, certainly on a Friday night starting at 8:30. But all those people tuned in, and it was just really, really meaningful to me. And it got me thinking about friendship. And so that led me really on a path of reflecting, first of all, on friendships throughout my life. And so I want to spend a brief amount of time talking about that so as to lay a foundation for the focus of this podcast, which is really an exploration of friendship. So throughout my life, I've had a wide variety of relationships, as I presume most people have. I'm definitely no exception. My earliest memories of being connected to people were my family, certainly, and then it grew into other kids and that kind of thing when I went to school. And I switched schools early on in elementary school. And so there's a little bit of a transition that occurred there for a couple years. But by the time I hit fifth and sixth grade, or about, you know, 10 to 12 years old, I had a really, I recall feeling very, very connected to a group of friends that I had at that time. As a, certainly as a young person, we all were, had so much energy and were so, so full of life. It was just really, really a fun time. And I think about those days fondly. But ultimately, I was not doing so hot in school. And so I started, or really continued on a trajectory of switching schools to what amounted to seven different times while all living in the same home in the same area as I grew up. And it was because I just kept getting in trouble or just all kinds of different things. That definitely was what the case was. So that bounced, so I bounced around because of that. And then I would bounce into groups of kids and then out of them because I'd go into some other group of kids. And it all was pretty chaotic there for a couple years. But by the time I hit high school, I remember again feeling really, really connected to a crew that I fell in with there. And a lot of those people I still keep in contact with and feel connected to this day, even though we don't communicate often. It's like I feel the same about them. It's a really sort of true connection. And I still jumped around schools throughout high school, but managed to maintain some of those relationships, even as I went eventually taking a train every day to school or just about every day to Philadelphia and back to Lancaster and kind of had a year or year and a half there where things weren't real social because I was attending school way out of town. But then coming back into the high school I went to and reuniting with a lot of those friends. And so I had maybe a childhood where I was bouncing around a lot and there was a high potential for not having intimate connections because I kept switching scenes socially. And so that was sort of the way it was in high school. And then after high school, I went to college, and in college I fell in with just a truly wonderful group of fellows who are still truly wonderful fellows, and I'm just very blessed to know them and consider them friends and be connected to them. But I kind of went my erratic nature through social circles and different scenes continued in college as I drifted away from those fellows I became friends with and joined a fraternity, which I really didn't like, and then became friends with some of those guys though, but then sort of ditched all that because it wasn't me and went back with these, you know. So I've kind of had this maybe fluxing stream of friends over the years, which is an interesting way to kind of operate. So after that, though, as I kind of entered the adult working world, so to speak, what I really did was I got quite involved with playing in bands, and then I would just sort of hang out with those people, and we'd have a real instrumental connection, no pun intended, where we were connected through this thing we were doing, and just met some really great people in a variety of different musical contexts that I would consider friends. And then as I got older, my family situation took a big change. Maybe half a decade ago or so, or a little longer. And that certainly, everything kind of broke down there in terms of different social connections and that kind of thing. But then since then, I've experienced what I would call a rebirth. And like, these are the best days of my life right now. And what I find is that I'm feeling more connected to others than ever. And I think it has something to do with the more authentically I've lived, the more connected I've become to people with less effort, if that makes any sense. And it's in unexpected ways. I have less assumptions about how to be connected to others or about what I should, how I should proceed in any direction with the person, because I'm feeling truer and truer to myself. Therefore, the place from which I'm operating is from my perception more and more authentic, and then I'm able to connect with people in an authentic way because of it. And so there's certainly all this, you know, it's all this evolving experience, but that's just how I'm feeling these days. And I'm really happy about that. And so what it makes me think about friendships of any connection I've had throughout my life, and some have been quite deep friendship connections and some have been not so much. But when I think about the deep connections, like my buddies from fifth and sixth grade, or my really close lifetime friends that I grew towards in high school, and then another crew like that in college, and certainly within those groups, different relationships with different individuals. When I think about those moments of true connection, I think about that friend. I think that friendships are an opportunity for us to experience ourselves and another or others at our best. We have an innate capacity for goodness that exists with or without friendship, but friendships enable us to experience it. Because it's an innate capacity that we have, we're naturally able to share it with others and can do so simply by realizing we're all inherently interconnected. And so I view friendships as an opportunity to experience our innate capacity for connection, and not just to people or things that we connect to easily. Maybe we have a premium on, oh, it was such a natural, easy connection. And a lot of times that can also be a really, really deep connection where you have all these realizations about being connected to somebody. But it's also possible to dig deeper for a connection with others because of this inherent capacity that we have. We all share it. So when I think of friendship, what my tendency is to want to explore spiritual textbooks or scriptures, to look into different philosophy. And that's just the kind of thing that floats my boat. I like to read it and synthesize it and talk to people about it, preferably write about it, but writing takes more time and seems to reach less people. So talking about it's great. And so I picked out a couple definitions from a few different spiritual traditions, really two different spiritual traditions, and then an American philosopher's take on it. And so I should probably say that another facet of the podcast is going to be intermittent mandolin music, or any music for that matter, because it's just what seems to be the right thing to do. So I have three different definitions of friendship that all have, well, it's really four, that all have different implications. And so I want to really go through them. They're short. And then just say a little bit about what I think is being revealed about friendship, maybe dig a little bit into each definition. And I want to say that the two spiritual traditions I chose to draw from are Christianity and Buddhism. And as I mentioned, also American philosophy. And I want to be clear, the reason I chose those two spiritual traditions is simply because they're the two that I'm most familiar with. I was raised in a kind of a Christian background, I'd say. But But then I have a strong interest in Buddhism that I've maintained for quite a while. And so they're just the two that I'm most familiar with. But I mean, no disrespect to other traditions. I have a keen interest in really all paths to God, or all paths at least to, not at least, but all paths to any kind of spiritual enlightenment or awakening or realizations or even arrival. So all due respect to all the other faiths out there that are contributing to the goodness. So the first definition that I want to go over is from, is from the Old Testament. And I, thanks to a good friend of mine, Eric Ian Farmer, I actually try not to use that term anymore, the Old Testament. Eric very generously and characteristically kindly pointed out to me, or suggested to me, you know, the term Old Testament is from a Christian perspective, and that's clear as day, right? So therefore, Jewish people are not going to refer to their scriptures as the Old Testament. It's the Testament, right? So it's the Jewish scriptures is something that I'm intending to say now instead of this sort of Christian view of Old Testament. So I draw from the Jewish scriptures from Proverbs chapter 18, verse 24. And in Proverbs, which by the way, if you want to read something amazing or listen to it in some way, read and or listen to Proverbs. Proverbs is absolutely amazing. It's some serious, serious ancient wisdom being rolled out in Proverbs. But in Proverbs chapter 18, verse 24, it says about friendship. It says, "One who has unreliable friends soon comes to ruin, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother." And the reason I pulled that out, of course, is because of the second half of the verse, really, which closes the verse out saying, "But there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother." And I just think it's a really beautiful verse. It starts off as a lot of ancient sort of couplets or proverbs sometimes do, by talking about maybe the opposite concept or some sort of thing that is not what they're ultimately going to say. For example, one who has unreliable friends soon comes to ruin. So that's like the danger, the downside. Unreliable friends soon come to ruin. Like that's not a thing to do. But there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. And of course, the Jewish scriptures, just like the New Testament, are patriarchal, so it's a lot of he and him and men and brother and all this kind of thing. So I want to be clear about that. So that's certainly coming through in this verse. But I would like to say that we can 99% of the time pull out any gender specific statements and just generalize it for all people. So if we say that, we say, "But there is a friend who sticks closer than a relative," then that gives it a little bit broader implications. And also it gives a sense as you think about it. Think about a positive experience you have with a biological relative. Because I know that it's funny to say, yeah, right, or something, or families are difficult, and that's true, or can be true. But if you can access a positive recollection or some kind of positive memory or even feeling for a relative, and then just sort of sit with what that connection is, you can get a sense of how it feels. I certainly think of my cousin James, my love, in terms of a biological family member, my sister Carrie, and really all of my relatives. I feel a love for and a connection to. I grew up with a
family that at the time was tightly knit. We were close. We did all our birthdays and holidays together and all that kind of stuff. It was kind of like how the good old days were represented in the movie Goodfellas, when everybody just did everything together all the time. We had a little bit of that going on. And so I have a sort of an inherent love for those people. So I think about them and what that feels like. And you can do the same. And then think about a really, really dear friend. Even if that person is no longer with us, or you haven't been in communication with that person, or it was for a very short-lived time, or just whatever. But think about a person who was truly, truly a dear friend to you. Excuse me. And it was quite clear. It was easy to tell. And just think about what that feels like. And there's something different about it than that love for a relative, right? At least there is for me. And I think that's what's being implied in this verse from Proverbs. A friend who sticks closer than a relative, or even a dear relative. So that's something to think about friendship. And I think that's something we all have access to, is that. And I should say, it's not, to speak in absolutes is not the thing to do, but I think it's something that many of us have access to be respectful. So the next definition or allusion or verse, I should say, to friendship comes through James from the New Testament. And it's James chapter 4, verse 4. So I wanted to represent something from the Jewish scriptures and also the New Testament. And full disclosure, I was really going for something from Jesus, but to find direct quotes from Jesus about friendship, I couldn't find it. That doesn't mean it doesn't exist. And if anybody else is aware of one that speaks directly to it, or any number of quotes, that's great. And I'd love to hear to read them. But I just couldn't find them. And so I switched from Jesus to James, Jesus's brother. And this is a little bit different. You know, the New Testament and really Jewish scriptures, there's kind of a looming doom always that's going on. It either has something to do with God and what his potential is if things don't go the way he would like, or it has to do with like the end of the world coming or something like that. Like, it's always there. It's a reality. And that's what it's a faith that's designed to help conceptualize all that. So there's a little bit of that in this quote from James, is what I'm saying. And the quote from James chapter 4, verse 4 is, "Whosoever therefore will be a friend of the world is the enemy of God." I'm going to repeat that. It's heavy. "Whosoever therefore will be a friend of the world is the enemy of God." And so what you have in there is you have some of that, I don't know if it's doom and gloom or if it's sort of this looming threat, basically. But it's also something that is intended to be good for the listener. Like, they should follow this advice. The advice is basically not to be a friend of the world. And I think depending on how we interpret that, that can be taken to be maybe a kind statement or not so kind statement. But we're talking the New Testament here. This is Jesus's brother. This is intended to be a kind statement. And so James basically saying anybody who's a friend of the world is the enemy of God. And what he's talking about there is that anybody who is attached to things that are not good for him or her or anybody else, the trappings of the world, the ego, self-indulgence and gluttony and capitalism and striving and money and property and belongings and greed and all these different things. That's the world. That's what society has. I mean, we have it in America with it's a intending to be capitalist. We have these big corporations that run things. You know, there's all these, this bottom line of money. So basically this verse is saying, anybody who's a friend of all that is an enemy of God. And so it's intending to make really a commentary on a friendship that is not a healthy thing, essentially, is the message I get out of that. And so, again, we have in the Proverbs verse, one who has unreliable friends soon comes ruin, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. And then the second, in the James verse, whosoever therefore will be a friend of the world is the enemy of God. Both contain a little bit of, a kind of threat or a impending doom, but both of them also suggest getting connected with this inherent goodness. And friendship's a vehicle through which that's delivered here in these verses. The second of the three definitions I'm going to draw on is from the Buddha. And I find in Buddhism, the teachings can be much, much more specific than they are in Christianity. And first and foremost, you can make an argument that there are four gospel. I'm not sure exactly how the books, maybe volumes. There's maybe two volumes of the Christian texts, which include the Jewish scriptures and the New Testament. There are books within those volumes, but there are two volumes, the sort of Jewish volume and the Christian volume. Buddhism has the first assortment of the oldest scriptures, the Pali Canon, that still exist, was 39 volumes. Okay, so consider the body of canonical Christian literature, two volumes to 39. And so obviously that's going to result in some teachings that are quite specific. So Buddha and Buddhism has a lot to say about friendship and specifically like specific quotes. What the Buddha says in the Upada Sutta, which is part of the Mahima Nikaya, part of the Mahima Nikaya, if I'm not mistaken. But it's a sutta is known in Sanskrit as a sutra. And they mean essentially the same thing. It's like a teaching or a verse. So in Pali, you say sutta, and in Sanskrit, you say sutra. And both languages are as ancient as the other one. Sanskrit is a little bit more popular because it had a script with it, like a way to write it. That was at some point universally adopted, I suppose. And Pali did not have a script. So it was an oral language. It wasn't written down. And it's likely that wasn't even the language the Buddha spoke Pali, but it's a language that's traced back to that time that at least people around him would have been speaking. Anyway, the quote that Buddha says in the Upada Sutta is this: admirable friendship, admirable companionship, admirable camaraderie are actually the whole of the holy life. When a monk has admirable people as friends, companions, and comrades, he can be expected to develop and pursue the noble eightfold path. So again, first and foremost, the gender patriarchal context is there in Buddhism as well, as a reflection of what their cultures were like at the time. So apologies to any gender-specific terminology, such as monks. But essentially what Buddha is saying here is very similar to what the Christian quotes have to say about it. And it's that admirable friendship is something that has to do with the holy life. Living righteously, right view, right understanding, not living in sin. Whatever the teachings are of those traditions, like living according to those, friendship is something that has to do with living that way. And I want to say there's a really mystical kind of reason for that, because whatever people want to say about the differences in different friendship is assigned with the highest value that it can be assigned in terms of what it involves between an individual and others. Each of the teachings says that friendship has to do with the holy life. In those teachings, the holy life is the highest possible calling for a person. So admirable friendships are not aside from, not on top of, not in connection to. They are literally a part of that holy life. So again, in that way, friendship is assigned perhaps the highest value it could be assigned. So I want to shift gears now into the final quote on friendship. And this is by Ralph Waldo Emerson. It's in his essay, Friendship. Ralph Waldo Emerson is one of my absolute hands down favorites. At one point, what I wanted to do was spend the whole rest of my life reading his stuff and telling other people about it. So essentially like teaching it and writing about it and doing all this stuff. I love Emerson, and I particularly love his earliest writings, his first set of essays that came out, which includes Nature, Self-Reliance, The American Scholar, and also, in addition to some other essays, an essay on friendship, simply called Friendship. It's one of his great essays, and in it, really, just like those others that I named, you have Emerson at the height of his powers, just so insightful and so poetic, and writing every sentence is an anagram that can be pulled out and considered independent of the context in which it was written. Just awesome, awesome Emerson. And this is what Emerson has to say of one of the many things he has to say about friendship in his essay. What is so pleasant as these jets of affection which make a young world for me again? What so delicious as a just and firm encounter of two in a thought, in a feeling? How beautiful on their approach to this beating heart, the steps and forms of the gifted and the true. The moment we indulge our affections, the earth is metamorphosed. There is no winter, no night. All tragedies, all ennuis vanish, all duties even. Nothing fills the preceding eternity but the forms all radiant of beloved persons. Let the soul be assured that somewhere in the universe it should rejoin its friend, and it would be content and cheerful alone for 1,000 years. So just a beautiful, amazing verse by Emerson about friendship. And again, Emerson is clearly assigning it this very lofty value, talking about how a friendship or a true connection literally changes the world for us. And certainly everything that Emerson wrote about had to do with the holy life in some way, and living as your truest self, self-reliant in your authenticity, not relying on ancient scriptures or anything like that. And so if he's writing about it, it has something to do with what his bottom line is too, which is something to do with mysticism. So thank you, Emerson, on that. And what I think about these three quotes is that, excuse me, they do a really good job of giving a broad overview of the importance of friendship in Western thinking. And I guess Eastern thinking, I'm sorry, Western, really thinking around the world. And so if our most sacred and ancient spiritual traditions, or some of our most sacred and ancient spiritual traditions are talking about friendship in this way, assigning it the highest value that it can be assigned, and a more modern person, if you could even say about Emerson, also assigning it that same kind of value, really a more recent American philosopher, aligning with those ancient texts in that way, it's clear that our friendships are really something that we should pay attention to and give our attention to. Because doing so has something to do with what our highest calling is. So our close friendships are an opportunity to better understand all of that. And that's, again, to repeat the theme from the beginning of this podcast episode, friendships are an opportunity for us to experience ourselves in another or others at our best. We have an innate capacity for goodness that exists with or without friendship, but friendships enable us to experience it. Because it's an innate capacity, we are naturally able to share it with others and can do so simply by realizing we are all inherently interconnected. And so that kind of transitions us to the next and final, really, segment of this episode, which has to do with an ancient Indian concept. And when I say Indian, I'm referring to the subcontinent of India. So this is an ancient Indian concept that I think is, we extend to this ancient Indian concept from where we are. And the ancient Indian concept states that everything is interdependent. Nothing exists in isolation. Excuse me. All existence is seamlessly, collaboratively emerging. And this is part of a doctrine, really, called dependent co-arising and conditionality. But it's really an ancient concept, however it's packaged, that everything's interdependent. Nothing exists in isolation. All existence is seamlessly, collaboratively emerging. And in other words, interconnected, which is this thing, this phenomenon that friendship enables us to see. It's an opportunity for us to see that interconnection. Because we're so connected to people that we feel close to, our friends, our close family, any person that we feel connected to in that way, if we're so blessed to have those people. And when we're connected to them, we're right in sync, right? Or we're, at the very least, in a comfortable spot where we know things are safe with that person. And there's that interconnectivity there where we're in the flow, where we're jiving with that person and we're doing our thing. But the teaching is this, that is possible with all of the things. And that includes other relationships with other human beings, other sentient beings, which would be anything, you know, running around, walking around, or crawling around, swimming around, alive here on the earth. And you can even, I think, take it as far as it has to do with our interconnectedness with all of the things that are in existence. This is what an ancient verse from the Mahima Nikaya, Sutta 28, has to say about it. When this exists, this naturally exists, like this other thing. Due to the arising of this, this consequently arises. When this does not exist, this naturally does not exist. Due to the quenching of this, this consequently is quenched. And I know there are a lot of this's in that verse, but but essentially it's just saying that everything exists and evolves in complete, seamless, and fluid collaboration, that nothing exists in isolation. Everything is interconnected. Not just that we're all these parts that are put together like a puzzle. It's a seamless and a fluid interconnection. So in that tight way of looking at things, there's really no logic in being disconnected from others. Even when we're feeling disconnected from our most challenging relationships, we're not inherently disconnected. That's what the teaching's all about. And so friendship is a way for us, through experiencing our best selves in connection with whoever that close other, or that intimate other is, that friend or your group of friends. We have that potential with people and things other than that group of friends. Like, the reason we do that with them is because we have the capacity to do so. And so then it gets into a little bit of a different consideration, because it's not, oh, I've got to find some way to connect to this person. I feel like we're just way off. It's that there is a way to connect. And then maybe some of our easiest relationships could potentially have even a type of superficiality to them because, oh, it was so easy to connect. We fell in right away on this super deep level. And it's great because those are beautiful relationships. But just because it was easy to do that and you fell in so deep and so hard, it doesn't mean that's the only way to connect or that it's kind of not possible to have connections unless it's like that or something. There's all kinds of ways. And that's what the teaching is about. And so to close out, I really just have a couple quotes regarding friendship that I just want to really share with you because I just like them so much. So the first quote, the first two quotes are also from Emerson and from his essay, Friendship, just because it's so amazing. I recommend that you read it if you never have. And if you haven't, maybe check it out again because it's just awesome. But Emerson says this in his essay, Friendship. I think this is the opening line to the essay. We have a great deal more kindness than is ever spoken. A great deal more kindness than is ever spoken. Exemplifying the point, we have this innate capacity to connect, to be kind. We have a highest self that can shine through that we're able to see in our friendships, but that we're also able to offer to others. Next quote from Emerson from Friendship. The whole human family is bathed with an element of love, like a fine ether. The whole human family, Emerson says, has this, it not only has, I would say, but is doused in or bathed in an element of love, like a fine ether. And the inclusion of the word ether has heavy implications depending on what you view that to be. But whatever it is, it's even if it's talking about simply a scent or a smell, or if it's talking about a type of fabric of reality, it's a heavy statement. And Emerson's saying we all have that love. And the last quote that I'd like to go over comes from another American transcendentalist from Emerson's time. Definitely my all-time favorite poet, Walt Whitman. just a brilliant, brilliant genius of a writer. And a wonderful human being as far as I understand. But Walt Whitman, in his epic poem, Song of Myself, the narrator is essentially singing about him or herself and being just interconnected to everything that exists. Like he says things such as, I am what everything else already is, and these types of statements. And so Whitman just really nails the concept home about being interconnected. And this is what he says. I'll read from the opening lines of Song of Myself, and then I will read from the closing lines of Song of Myself. The opening lines are, I celebrate myself, and what I assume, you shall assume. For every atom belonging to me, as good belongs to you. And so, of course, the interesting words in there are assume and belongs. But essentially, Whitman's saying, we're interconnected. It's just that simple. We all have ownership over all of this, no one more or less than another. And honestly, no living or sentient thing more or less than another, where we're talking about something out in the natural world or a forest, or we're talking about a human or non-human. We all are an equally legitimate part, and we're all interconnected in that way. And then it goes on to the end of the poem. And the poem ends with Whitman writing, I bequeath myself to the dirt to grow from the grass I love. If you want me again, look for me under your boot soles. You will hardly know who I am or what I mean, but I shall be good health to you nevertheless, and filter and fiber your blood. failing to fetch me at first, keep encouraged, missing me one place, search another. I stop somewhere, waiting for you. And that's how Whitman ends his epic Song of Myself, saying, even after I pass away, I'm still with you. You just have to look. And you'll be able to see that I'm everywhere, just like we all are. And I think very fittingly for the theme of this episode, Whitman was really, really big on friendship, very open to and good at establishing deep connections with people, both men and women. And so that's, so he feels about friendship the same way that the earlier quotes from the Jewish scriptures and the New Testament and Emerson express. Whitman's operating from that same place. Friendship is a place to understand this highest calling. And clearly in what Whitman has to say is that because of our connection, because of this intimate thing we share, because I'm a person and you're a person, because we're all sharing existence here, people and non-people. Because of that, because of this connection, you should be able to see that I'm everywhere, that we're everywhere, that everything is interconnected. And friendship gives us the ability to see that. So the only thing I want to leave you with, in consideration of all these great quotes and these different talking points, is to think about friendship, and maybe we can think about our friendships, and we can think about, in what way does this help me in what I know is my highest self, or in pursuit of that thing that I know is best for me? Like, and it's not in a way of screening people out or weeding them out or something like that. It's in a way of saying, what can I celebrate about this relationship? How does this encourage me or support me or help me connect to the best I know I can be, or the best version of me, or just whatever, all of the goodness. And just think about that. Maybe sit with it, object of meditation, however you'd want to approach that. But what I want to say is thanks so much for listening to this episode of Seeds of Liberation, the first episodes of Seeds of Liberation, the third episode in the whole podcast, because we changed the name this episode. But I'm really happy everybody listened. Have a wonderful evening, day, week, month, whatever. Keep an eye out for future podcast episodes. I'd like to thank the Band Junkies, Northfield Mandolins, Dennis Vance at the Mandolin Store, and anybody else who's, oh, and also I should say the Anchor app and podcast recording company. You can check out Anchor at anchor.fm. All you do is record it. They put it up for you and everybody in the world can hear it. So thanks so much, Anchor. Goodbye, everybody.